It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by on-camera and voiceover talent RodHunter.com and the law offices of Matthew Simone. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist Bob Siegel.
My thoughts on Israel's strike against Iran that began on Thursday? It's about time. That's all I have to say. It's about time. Iran for years has threatened to wipe Israel off the face of the earth. Well, Israel believed them. And Iran funded the Hamas attack too, the one that took place in October of 2023. But naturally, Iran is now painting Israel as the aggressor for this preemptive strike. It is an outrage! It is an outrage! And, hold on to your seats. Big surprise, many of our Democrat politicians are condemning Israel for the strike. Because in any airstrike, some innocent people may get killed. Yeah, well, how many innocent people would get killed if they developed a nuclear weapon? And they also threatened to wipe the United States off the face of the earth. Then we'd have a lot of innocent people killed. Democrats are doing a lot of things these days, and most of it comes at the cost of our own U.S. security. Riots and unrest have been going on all over the country, fueled by the Democrats and their many lies about immigration and deportation. They lie about all issues. They lie about everything, not just immigration. But to keep things succinct so that we're not here all night, we'll concentrate right now only on their lies about immigration. The first lie, under Biden, our borders were secure. 7.2 million illegals entered the United States under the Biden administration. That's an amount greater than the population of 36 states combined. Now, even if you had not known that figure, wouldn't you have known the Democrats were lying anyway? Inasmuch as under Democrat politicians, we have so many sanctuary cities and sanctuary states. Who are they expecting to live in these sanctuaries? Obviously, they knew the border wasn't secure, and they didn't want the border to be secure. That may seem like political suicide. That may seem like insanity. It only makes sense if they're hoping to cheat in elections with extra votes. But they'll deny that. They'll deny that until they're blue in the face and insist, this is only about compassion. We have compassion. The Republicans don't. And while they lied out of one side of their mouth that the border was secure, they condemned with the other side of their mouth that anybody who wanted a secure border was a racist. See, it's secure, and we've secured it, but if you want to secure it, you're a racist. Yeah, racism is the reason that people want closed borders. Racism is the reason that people don't believe in immigration. How many times on TV did we see some advocate for open borders with that smug smile? And when asked to explain themselves, we'd hear things like, well, Sean, let me start here. We are a nation of immigrants, Sean. We are a proud nation of immigrants. Nobody's arguing that point, you jackass, and you know it. President Trump's own wife is an immigrant, a legal immigrant. They are hoping that with the usual sleight of hand, they can conflate legal with illegal immigration. But legal immigrants, for the most part, support the deportation of people who are not here legally. Why not? They waited their turn. They did it the right way. They waited in line. Even a grade schooler knows you can't take cuts when you're in line at the cafeteria. The next lie, ICE is deporting even people who are here legally. That is simply not true. And it's very disingenuous anyway, because many on the left don't recognize the difference between legal or illegal. Although in the case of Maxine Waters, we can't always be sure where the lies end and the stupidity begins. Maxine Waters says all illegals should be given citizenship, as the Constitution says. As the Constitution says. She wouldn't know the Constitution from a Lucky Charms cereal box top. The next lie. The protests in Los Angeles were mostly peaceful. These are the same people who made such comments in 2020 when cities were being burnt to a crisp all over the country. Remember the famous footage that went viral of a CNN reporter saying the protest is mostly peaceful and there's a burning building right behind him while he talks? These are the same people who told us not to believe our eyes about Biden's physical and mental decline. These are the same people who claimed our border was secure under Biden. Now we're supposed to believe them again. Don't trust your lying eyes. Honestly, the emperor is wearing clothes, but only intelligent people see the clothes. And then when the lie gets exposed, it's bait and switch. The borders were secure, but okay, even if they weren't, all these people have a right to be here legally anyway. That's why we have sanctuary cities, and okay, the riots weren't peaceful, but that's only because of Donald Trump. Everything was peaceful until he brought in the National Guard. Right, we were having nothing but peaceful protests. That's why the National Guard had to be brought in. Stores weren't being looted. Cars weren't being set on fire. Rocks and cocktails weren't being thrown at ICE agents. Let's back up. ICE has a right to arrest anybody who's here illegally, whether they do further crime after they get here or not. Now, they say they're starting with the bad criminals, but anybody here illegally is also breaking the law. The left wants us to concentrate only on those, the people who just want to work and go to school, and they're claiming that ICE is specifically targeting them. Not true. ICE is going after the dangerous people first. However, if in the process of arresting a violent person, they encounter others who are also here illegally, so be it. Such people may not be on the list of horribly bad, but they're not innocent either. They are a threat to our way of life. They flood the healthcare market. They flood the job market. They flood Social Security. Those systems are all getting broken due to illegals. But in the case of Los Angeles, the specific people arrested were guilty of murder, child abuse, human trafficking. That's who the rioters were trying to protect. Those are the people whose release was demanded. Things would have gotten less out of hand if the LA police were allowed to cooperate with ICE. But you see, you can't do that in Los Angeles. It's a sanctuary city. LA police can't inquire or ask about somebody's immigration status, even if after arrested for a crime. And if it comes out later that the criminal was here illegally, they are not allowed to turn them over to ICE. In many cases, they're just being let out of jail. So then ICE goes to find them in the streets or homes or workplaces. Leftist organizations tip off the protesters, and we end up with an unmitigated mess. Then people attack ICE agents. ICE asks the LAPD for help. The mayor at first tells LAPD to stand down. So they are delayed. They finally arrive, but by then the situation's out of hand. The police themselves are now saying they're overwhelmed. Newsom won't call in the National Guard, so Trump does. Then Newsom lies and says Trump is using the National Guard illegally. My friends, the law allows the president to federalize the National Guard if the governor isn't doing his job, and our incompetent governor isn't doing his job. The only thing he does well is build statues to himself. The police wouldn't help ICE, couldn't help ICE legally, so Trump had no choice but to call the National Guard. Protesters in the streets are now comparing ICE to Nazis. They're comparing them to the Gestapo that rounded up Jews. I'm so sick and tired of this illustration. I'm Jewish myself, so let me be very clear. Jews were not being kicked out of Germany because they crossed the border into Germany illegally. Jews were already legal German citizens. And the Nazis didn't kick them out and make them go to other countries. They rounded them up, brought them to extermination camps, and murdered them. The left needs to stop comparing everything to the Nazis. It waters down what the real Nazis did. If everybody is a Nazi, nobody is a Nazi. And isn't it interesting that when we see actual Jew haters who act like honest-to-goodness, real, genuine Nazis, the left always rushes to their defense. They tried to pass a resolution in Congress recently condemning the Boulder attack against the Jewish senior citizens, where he tried to murder all of them. Did you know that 113 House Democrats voted not to condemn the attack? And these are the people calling us Nazis for wanting a border? So the left compares ICE to Nazis and says, therefore, the police need to disobey ICE's orders. These are the same people who give sanctimonious lectures about the rule of law to Trump supporters. Anyway, that is the sequence of events that was taking place in Los Angeles. That's what laid the groundwork. But the historical revision of Gavin Newsom claims everything was peaceful until Trump came along. And so the same people bragging about following the rule of law are going out of their way to say they will not obey federal law. Tom Homan responded. He says, I'll say it about anybody. You cross that line, it's a felony to knowingly harbor and conceal an illegal alien. It's a felony to impede law enforcement doing their job. So Newsom is asked to respond to that. He says, oh, he's a tough guy. Why doesn't he do that? He knows where to find me. That kind of bloviating is exhausting. So Tom, arrest me. Let's go. Bloviating. He's lecturing Homan about bloviating, and he's doing that with a straight face. Then a reporter asks President Trump about Homan potentially arresting Newsom. Trump replied, I would do it if I were Tom. Gavin likes the publicity, but I think it would be a great thing. Then Newsom responds again, the President of the United States just called for the arrest of a sitting governor. This is a day I hoped we would never see in America. I don't care if you're a Democrat or a Republican. This is a line we cannot cross as a nation. This is an unmistakable step toward authoritarianism. How do you like this piece of work? He dares the Trump administration to arrest him and then squawks about it when Trump says, okay, maybe we will. Of course, anybody with half a brain knows that if Newsom for 1 second thought he'd do any real time in a prison, he never would have made that remark. In his careful calculations, he's merely sounding brave, and he figures that even in the unlikely scenario that he might be arrested, it would only be a useful photo op where he's released within a half hour. He says this was a day he hoped we'd never see in America. No, my friends, this was just exactly what he hoped would happen. He's trying to look like a hero to run for president. Let me tell you what's going on, because the last election and current polls show that the high majority of the country is behind Trump on immigration and deportation. So why would Newsom think he has a snowball's chance in hell of winning in 2028? Because right now he's not seeking to win any general election. He's seeking a Democrat nomination. He's kissing up to his donors, constituents, special interest groups, funders like Soros. They may be in the minority right now, but those are the people he has to kiss so he can get the nomination. Then after he's nominated, he'll try to run for the center and portray himself as the governor of common sense, law and order. He'll maybe rerun some of his podcasts where he was sounding a little more sensible. Will he get away with this? Well, I remind you that he got elected as governor after disobeying the law as a San Francisco mayor. He was giving licenses to gay people. That was when it was illegal to give licenses to gay people. He did it anyway. He said, whether you like it or not. Then it became legal, gay marriage, not because the people of California wanted it legal. They went out of their way to say it should not be legal. They passed Proposition 8, which added a clause to the California Constitution that marriage is restricted for a man and a woman. The federal Supreme Court overturned that. Newsom and his ilk now remind us that gay marriage is the law of the land. No, it isn't. The law of the land was overturned by judges. But okay, that's how they wanted to define law of the land. But before the courts did that, when gay marriage was not even in their definition the law of the land, they disobeyed the law. And what about sanctuary states? They absolutely defy the law of the land and the Constitution. You see, the standard for obeying or disobeying the law to Democrats is that they obey the laws they like, they disobey the laws they don't like, but they will always lecture conservatives about obeying the law. And he's counting on people continuing to be just that stupid. Now he's outraged that the threat of jail could happen to a sitting governor. Gavin, You may have the title governor by your name, but you have not been a sitting governor for a long time. You've done nothing to keep your state safe from crime. Under you, people could go into stores and loot $999 worth of goods without being arrested. And you've done nothing to keep your state safe from fires. And you were doing nothing about this current crisis, which is why Trump called out the National Guard. But instead of owning up to that, he claims there was no real problem before Trump escalated things by calling in the National Guard. If the alliance between lawmakers and stupid people continues, he may just get away with it. This is Bob Siegel making the obvious obvious.
You only need to listen to this radio program once to figure out that Bob has very strong opinions on a wide variety of issues. But one of Bob's strongest passions is freedom of speech itself, even when such speech challenges his own convictions. So feel free to send Bob a comment or a thought-provoking question. You can reach Bob on Facebook or questions@bobsiegel.net.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-aged child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
Welcome back to 1170 AM, 96.1 FM, The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. Say hello again to my good friend, Jim Barrier.
Well, happy Father's Day.
Happy Bob. Father's Day to you, Jim.
And to all of the listeners out there, all you dads, fathers, stepfathers, grandfathers, mentors who aren't biological.
Even white straight fathers. Even white straight fathers are okay, right, Jim?
Yeah. So happy Father's Day to all of you. And we greatly appreciate fathers and all they do for their families and their loved ones. Just wanted to make sure we address that. Now, the opening segment, you did a great job talking about one of the worst things or people to ever come out of California. And I mean worse. And I'm about to turn 74, and I'm a native Californian, and I know much of the history of that state. And there have been some good governors and some not so good governors. But right now, you're under maybe the worst governor that state's ever had. And you went into great detail about some of the blemishes on his record. I'd like to turn the corner now and talk about one of the best people that California has ever produced. And of course, we lost this musical giant this week. And I'm talking about Brian Wilson.
Yeah, how sad. And what an icon of the Beach Boys.
Oh, my gosh. Well, an icon in music in general, and I'll go into detail about that in a little bit.
It might make it easier for you to guess Brendan Stump Jim Barrier, though. I can't imagine it won't be a Beach Boys. Maybe he'll find some really obscure Beach Boys song that even you don't know.
Well, good luck on that. I have some pretty obscure stuff by the Beach Boys and by Brian himself, but I'm a huge fan of his work, his life, his legacy.
I remember when they were really hot, but then when the Beatles showed up on the Ed Sullivan Show, it just pulled all the wind off of their sails, or off of their surfboards, I should say. And for a while, nobody was talking about the Beach Boys. But then, of course, years later, they made a huge comeback.
Well, and the fact is, Brian addressed that at one point. We'll get to that in a little bit. I want to talk about some of their history, but it's impossible for me to say how much this man inspired me and practically every musician of my generation. I mean, everybody from the British bands to heavy metal, everyone had a great appreciation for Brian. Now, I was in elementary school the first time I heard the Beach Boys, and I heard a song called Surfin' Safari. At its flip side, 409. She's real fine, my 409.
Oh, yeah. I used to love those 45s.
Oh, I love their stuff. And the Beach Boys did all this music. Now, surf music wasn't just about the beaches and waves and girls in bikinis. It was also about hot rods. In fact, they had a gold mine that they discovered by...
And the surfer's car, the station wagon that was called a Woody.
The Woody, yeah, which is actually from a Jan and Dean song. But
yeah, I loved them too, but they kind of disappeared overnight and were eclipsed by the Beach Boys.
Yeah, they had a couple of hits.
Well, they had that accident, so nobody knew what had happened to them.
And then there's the song Dead Man's Curve, which was also,
became kind of prophetic.
Yeah, it was. Now, I wanted to talk about the Hot Rod songs because they're doing this surf music, which was very popular in California, particularly Southern California, where they were from, and maybe in Florida and some other places. But they realized that there was a whole audience across Middle America that couldn't really relate to surfing. And so they started doing all these songs about hot rods and Little Deuce Coupe, which was talking about a 1932 Ford coupe. And it also referenced, I'm not even going to mention his name. But anyway, they were doing all these songs about cars, and that brought in a whole audience of its own. Kids in those days loved hot rods and loved tricking their cars out and street racing and all that. So they started a whole genre of its own. It wasn't just rock and roll. There was surf music, which prior to the Beach Boys was pretty much instrumentals by artists like Dick Dale and Link Wray, Duane Eddy, the Surfaris, remember Wipeout?
In fact, at the Wild Animal Park, they used to do these summer night concerts. We saw Jan and Dean and the Surfaris together.
Oh, what a great show.
It was great. Of course, Jan couldn't sing anymore. He had never completely recovered from the accident. They had so much backup. You realize the backup was doing most of the singing. But it was still a thrill to see them. It was great.
It's nostalgia. And the Ventures were another one. Walk, Don't Run. So surf music was initially identified by the instrumental songs, which were guitar-driven. And when the Beach Boys came on, it changed that whole thing and then became vocals. And my goodness, there was, in my opinion, never a better vocal group than the Beach Boys. They did 3-part, 4-part harmonies. They were just amazing in their ability to sing.
Were they imitating Frankie Valli? Up to then, you didn't hear male voices get so falsetto when they sang. But I remember Frankie Valli in the Four Seasons, and then the Beach Boys did it too.
Yeah, but the Beach Boys did so much harmony, and that's what set them apart from everybody else. The Beach Boys were, for those that aren't familiar with all the individuals, they were formed in Hawthorne, California in 1961. It was Brian Wilson, his two brothers, Carl and Dennis, their cousin, Mike Love, and two friends, neighbors, Al Jardine and David Marsh.
Now, is it true that only one of them could actually surf? Dennis, I believe?
Dennis was the only one that was really a surfer.
Yeah, that's kind of funny. They're singing about surfing, but they didn't really surf.
Yeah, he was the influence in them doing surf music because he loved all that whole scene. Al Jardine left the band temporarily and then rejoined when David Marsh left. David Marsh, most people don't know about him, but he was on the first three albums. So you had this group of brothers and family that were very young, and they started this craze. And so then we had Jan and Dean, Bruce and Terry. They were also known as the Ripcords. Remember the song, Hey Little Cobra, Gonna Shut Them Down?
Yes, I do remember the Cobra song and Shut Them Down.
Terry Melcher did a lot of writing and producing also. Bruce Johnston is one of my favorite people. By the way, he wrote the song, I Write the Songs, that Barry Manilow had a big hit with. And he has talked about that. He wrote that song about Brian Wilson, who was such a great songwriter.
And it's funny because I believe that is the only Barry Manilow song that I liked was I Write the Songs. I didn't care for anything else in his repertoire.
It was written by a Beach Boy because Bruce Johnston joined the Beach Boys. Brian Wilson quit touring. He didn't like the tour, and he left in the middle of a tour And temporarily, they got Glenn Campbell.
How about that?
On another song. He was a studio musician with a group called The Wrecking Crew that did a lot of the instruments on the Beach Boys albums. And Glenn Campbell finished that tour, and then Bruce Johnston signed up, and he took over and became an official Beach Boy. And I love Bruce Johnston. He did some great music. And he could play bass, and he could play keyboards, and he could sing those high parts, so he fit in perfect. By the way, Glenn Campbell, who I have great admiration for, called Brian Wilson a musical Mozart. And Glenn was an incredible musician. Somebody said about him at an awards ceremony one time that if there was ever a case of one body having too much talent in it, it was Glenn Campbell. So
I always like it when accomplished artists speak highly of other artists. It's a nice feeling.
And they all spoke highly of Brian Wilson. And some of it is because he was so unique. He created a sound that is known as the Beach Boy sound, or the Brian Wilson sound, with the intricate harmonies, the vocal layering, complex structures, and imaginative arrangements. He did stuff that no one thought was possible. He was one of the very first pop artists who wrote, arranged, produced, recorded, and performed his own music. They didn't need anybody else. He's been called many times a musical genius, and his influence is far-reaching. Paul McCartney said that God Only Knows was the greatest song ever written. He and Brian kind of formed this, started off as a rivalry, then it became a friendship, because as you mentioned, the Beach Boys were doing very well, and then the Beatles came on the scene.
It was like overnight. People forgot who they were, almost like overnight.
Well, almost. Brian talked about it. He said at first they were a little intimidated, but he said it pushed them to do better music. And in 1964, I'll never forget, because I used to stay up on Sunday night and listen to the countdown of the top 10, and the Beach Boys song, I Get Around, knocked the Beatles off number one.
Oh, that's great. Okay, yeah. Jim, hold with me over the break. We'll be back. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show. This is Bob Siegel. With the wiring in your home, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. For all you know, he may have gotten his license by sending in three serial box tops.
Hey, these things happen. There's nothing wrong with my wiring. Houses burned down. You wanted a guarantee? You should have ordered the deluxe package.
Folks, play it smart. Call WNS Electric Incorporated. They specialize in contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, WNS takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I use them myself, and I wouldn't call anyone else. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for WNS Electric, license number 480539, WNS Electric.
Well, speaking of Paul McCartney, a little Paul McCartney right here, but most important, it's time for our show within a show, Stump Jim Barrier.
Jim, you are so... I was going to do a Beach Boys song tonight. How about that, Jim?
Well, you know, take your chances. I hope it's something apropos that you have for us tonight. What do you got?
Well, I'm going to play... Honestly, I hit random on my Spotify account to see which Beach Boys song would come up first. Turned out it's a very popular one, so I think you'll get this with...
So it'll be a matter of how many seconds,
exactly,
not whether he gets it.
Exactly, yeah. So without any further ado, Jim, are you ready?
Okay, yeah.
All right, here we go then.
Well, Well, since she put me down, I bet I
Well, it didn't take very many seconds, Bob.
What do you got?
Brandon. Yeah, one of my favorites, and it is a Beach Boy song. Help Me, Rhonda.
That is correct.
And it's a great, great song.
Rhonda, you look so
Good job, Jim.
It
Good
really
job.
Was great music.
Yeah, for sure.
They did great stuff.
So I don't know if you're going to get into Brian's struggles yet, into your little spiel. Do you have that in your notes or no, not tonight?
Well, he had a lot of issues. He struggled with mental illness and depression. He got hooked up with a counselor that was really, the guy was just crazy and he was manipulating Brian, mind control.
You're talking about Eugene Landing, right?
Yeah.
Did they have an overbearing dad? There was a television movie. I never know how much truth is in those television movies, but they showed an overbearing dad. They were going to kick Dennis Wilson out. And there was this line in the movie. It says, fine, kick out the only beach boy who knows how to surf. But I didn't know how much of that was true since I was just watching it in a movie.
I read Brian's autobiography, and that was word for word.
Oh,
what
really?
He was saying.
Okay.
And he found that his father was abusive to him and to the other members of the Beach Boys and overbearing.
Murray Wilson, and he was the manager at first, and obviously there was a control issue going on because he wanted to control everything, but Brian was the talent. He was the genius, and eventually they parted ways, but Murray was very abusive. Now, you may know that Brian Wilson was deaf in one ear.
I had no idea.
Which makes it even more amazing, but I'll talk about that in a minute, but he just said it was an injury from his childhood, and they
did that make him half as talented as Beethoven?
You know what? That's a great comparison. It's a great comparison, actually. But Murray, he was a piece of work, and he did a lot of damage. Brian suffered a stroke. He had all kinds of problems. He experimented with LSD and all that, messed up a lot of people, but he did eventually come around. All of that was right around in the same time when he quit touring, and there was a season where he wouldn't even leave his room. He just laid in bed, and he did have a lot of issues. And you can't blame it all on his dad. You can't blame it all on drugs. Sometimes people just have, you know, we like to use the term in our culture, he had his demons, and he certainly had a lot of issues, but he prevailed through it. And the truth is, there have been a lot of artistic geniuses, musical painters, sculptors. They say that genius and insanity sometimes are very, very closely linked. I'm not saying that he was insane, but he did have issues. He did come around. When he got rid of that counselor, his second marriage turned out to be very healing for him. So I have even greater respect for him because of persevering through those things. In fact, this is something Bob Dylan said about Brian Wilson. He said he made all of those records with just four tracks. And he said, today, someone couldn't make those records that he made if they had 100 tracks. And Brian actually said, when I make music, I make it in mono because I can only hear out of one side. And that's how they recorded most of their early stuff. He said, it's already mixed down in my head. And so with that one ear, he heard more than most people do with two perfectly good ears. And as for that ear, Bob Dylan also said, he's got to will that ear to the Smithsonian. So he was incredible. He was off the charts. And kind of back to that whole Beatle thing, when the Beatles came out, it really pushed Brian to do better music. And when he quit touring, he went into the studio and started doing stuff. And he came up with this album called Pet Sounds, which was a phenomenal album. If you ever listen to it, you think, how in the world did he come up with that stuff? And I'd heard a story from one of the studio musicians. He would write parts, and they'd come in one at a time and record, and he'd written some guitar leads, and he told the guitarist, play this. And the guitar player said, that doesn't make sense. It won't fit. It doesn't work. He said, just record it. And of course, when he did, it fit perfectly, and the song was tremendous. So he had this ear that no one else had. He imagined things that no one else could, and then he could make it all come to pass in the studio. In fact, it has been said that he used the studio as an instrument. And so he was a tremendous talent and creator. So they did the Pet Sounds album, which, by the way, the cover picture was shot at the Children's Zoo in San Diego. And when the Beatles heard Pet Sounds, Paul McCartney said, oh, now what are we going to do? And so they came up with Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. And so there was this rivalry that was really pretty good for music. They just kept pushing each other to write great stuff and record great stuff. Now, I'm going to back up a little bit. The Beach Boys released a song called Little Saint Nick at Christmas. You remember that song,
oh,
don't
yeah.
you?
It's a classic yeah, every year.
It hit number 3 on the charts, a Christmas song. And the flip side, not as well known, was an a cappella version of the Lord's Prayer.
No
And you just
kidding.
Have to listen to it.
I have never heard that.
It's an arrangement that no one else could ever imagine. I mean, it's crazy. It's all over the place, but it's just beautiful. And it turns out that that was kind of a harbinger of things to come, both musically and spiritually. So then they released an album following that, the Beach Boys Christmas album, and it had Little Saint Nick on it. Also, my all-time favorite arrangement of We Three Kings of Orient Are. And you listen to that, and it sounds like something that somebody wrote for a film score or some classical piece. Just tremendous.
I don't know how I missed some of these.
Oh, you got to get the Beach Boys Christmas music. Now, in 2005, we're fast-forwarding a huge time warp here. Brian had been on his own for quite a while, and he released an album called What I Really Want for Christmas. And it featured two of the songs from that Beach Boys Christmas album, along with 3 new original songs that he wrote, and then 10 traditional Christmas carols. These songs, this is what caught my attention. You know, the great classic Christmas carols are really hymns. And there's all this deep messages about the birth of Christ and the redemption of man. And he recorded these songs, and I bought it immediately, and I told Leslie after I listened to it, I don't know how he could sing those words without being affected by them. And shortly after that, he released a single to raise money, to raise funds for the victims of Hurricane Katrina. This is back in 2005. And that single had a song that was a medley of one of his songs called Love and Mercy, which is a great song, and a new song he wrote called Walking Down the Path of Life. Here's some of the lyrics. Brian Wilson. Walking down the path of life, I feel his presence day and night. Touch me, heal me, wash my sins away.
That sure that sounds like somebody who met Christ.
I think he did, and I think it was onto something when I heard that Christmas album and their impact on him. And since that time, he has written many spiritual songs, and he was not ashamed to talk about God. In fact, you know, back to the Pet Sounds album, they did a song called God Only Knows, and it was the first pop song to have the word God in the title, and that was pretty controversial. They were afraid to do it because they thought they'd get a lot of bad feedback, but he's never been afraid to talk about that. So there's the evolution, the life of Brian Wilson. I saw him several times when he started touring again solo, and he had stage fright, you know. So he was very awkward on the stage, but he was just this incredible producer-arranger, and that came out in his concerts and in his songs. So I want to ask you guys, because we're going to move on. We're not going to have a whole lot of time left here. Bob, Brendan, what are some of your favorite Brian Wilson or Beach Boys songs, if you have a favorite.
Can I go first?
Yeah, go right ahead.
Okay, I can tell my least favorite, and it's my wife's favorite. I can't stand Kokomo. I really, really
well, did. Now, that was one of their newer ones. Wasn't it released with that movie called Cocktail?
Yeah, it was with Tom Cruise.
Horrible movie, and not a great, although it was nice to see the Beach Boys back, and I thought it was an okay song, but I guess I associate it with that movie that really wasn't very good.
I just can't stand that song, personally. I think it's a very big sellout move, unfortunately. But it was one of the cool things.
It was
about
the number one song for the first time in a long, long time.
Right. That was the cool thing at that time of the 80s is that all these 70s and 60s stars were getting a revival in their careers. Like Cher was getting a revival and all that stuff.
Yeah. So what was something you liked?
Yeah, now something I do like a lot. So personally, again, Wouldn't It Be Nice is just a sweet, sweet song. But I do want to give a huge, huge shout out to Good Vibrations. That was just so experimental at the time. And for him to make the kind of thing to do to make it sound that way, it was just really, really creative. I also want to give a shout out. He's a very controversial figure, but Mike Love really, really kind of like honed in on Brian's creativity at the time, because what he would do is he hear Brian's ideas, he goes, okay, but we need to make this into a mainstream kind of thing instead of an experimental side a lot of the time. So he would try to hone in Brian's stuff. Now, again, his personal life and his other shenanigans, I can't agree with.
Yeah.
The other thing I read that was quite interesting was his brother was involved with Charles Manson at the time, which was quite interesting. What happened was Brian Wilson actually helped record some early recordings of Charles Manson. For those of you who don't know, Charles Manson was a folk artist early on before he did his actions. During that time, Brian was with the psychiatrist and a lot of things were going on that were terrible. Luckily, Brian was able to overcome those.
Get out of that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So,
again,
shows to the overcoming of his whole life struggles and obstacles he had in front of him.
Yeah, for me, I've got to say Good Vibrations, too. That was the first one that popped in, the brilliance of it.
Yeah.
Some, and now these are just nostalgia, because I was not a teenager during the prime time of the Beach Boys. I was a little kid, but I loved, there was one, I think it was called County Fair or State Fair, kind of a sad song where some guy can't ring the bell at the fair and some other guy shows him up, and then Surfer Girl, and I loved In My Room, because that was my favorite place growing up, inside my own room. Yeah. So those were some that were just personally nostalgic. But if I had to be objective, obviously Good Vibrations was just a brilliant song.
It was, and that came when the psychedelic era was happening. And
it showed them get into the times.
Yeah. Well, you're very well versed on your Beach Boys.
Well, yeah, I know my Beach Boys a little better than I can't do the whole genre like you do, but I'm okay with Beach Boys. But I'm getting some vibrations about a break right now. We will be right back.
I'm Dr. David Poole, president of San Diego Christian College. If you've been thinking about getting your pilot's license and a degree in aviation, come fly with us. We have a long history of producing aviation leaders. Whether your focus is on commercial, missionary, or military, we're ready to help you achieve your goals from a Christian worldview. So look us up at sdcc.edu. That's sdcc.edu. San Diego Christian College. Come fly with us.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. Our theme, Christianity and its relationship to politics and pop culture. Say hello again to Jim Barrier.
And here we are. Now, I want to close up here because it is Father's Day. And on Mother's Day, I told a story about my mom, which, you know, she was an amazing woman. And I want to talk about my dad a little bit, which is a little bit of a darker story. As I'd mentioned with my mom and dad split up when I was very little, before I was even in school, because of his alcoholism. And he was the classic Skid Row drunk, the guy you'd see pass out on somebody's front lawn, you know, or out in an alley. He was a mess. He was a very broken person. But he was my dad. And I loved him. I lost track of him during high school. And I'd seen him off and on up until then. But in high school, I was growing up and getting my own, you know, my own ideas and moving on. And I had lost track of my dad. And when my first child was born, I thought, I need to find dad and tell him that he's a grandfather. I think he'd be pleased to know that. Now, I didn't know where he was, but I knew what part of town he hung out in San Diego. So I went up and down El Cajon Boulevard. You're familiar with the road. And I went to every bar on the strip and went in and asked, do you know Bob Barrier? And finally, I went into a place, and the bartender said, yes, I do. And I said, yeah, where can I find him? And he said, go down to such and such a corner, and there's a junk shop there, and he works for the lady there. He paints things and fixes stuff, and her name is Agnes, and she'll tell you how to find him. So I said, thanks, and I ran out the door, went down the street, and I found the junk shop. I walked in, and Agnes, who I'd never met in my life, took one look at me and said, you are Bobby's son. So I guess I favor him a bit. I did look a lot like my dad. So she hooked me up with him, and I found him. He lived in a little, it was really just a tool shed, paint shack. But I was reunited with my father, and he was still a heavy drinker, and he would call me when things got tough. He got the DTs, if you know what that is, delirium tremors. He drank so bad he'd have seizures, and he'd get sick. He was just a mess. But after I reunited with him, he'd call me sometimes and ask if I'd go sit with him until he was better. And he called me one night, and he said, "Could you come over? I'm not doing too good." And I said, "Sure." And it was late at night, and hung up the phone, told Leslie, I'll be back. Dad's not doing too good. And she knew the story. I went over to his place, and I made coffee for him, and we sat up and played dominoes for hours until he started getting sober and then felt good enough to eat something. And while we're there, I was there for hours, and I heard that still small voice. You know that still small voice that you hear sometimes? And this is what I heard. You haven't given your own father the courtesy that you offer a stranger on the street. Tell him about my son. Wow. So I began to share the gospel with my dad and the love of God. And I said, Dad, people have told you for so long that you're rotten that you've begun to believe it. And you're not rotten, Dad. You're not worthless. God made you in his image. He sent his son to die for you, which makes you very valuable. You're not worthless. You're extremely valuable in the eyes of God. And I shared with him plan of salvation, and we prayed together, and he began to weep. And afterwards, he said, I've never felt this uplifted in my life. And Dad passed away a couple of months after that. And I was so glad that I had that opportunity and was obedient to the Holy Spirit's leading to tell my dad about Jesus. And it was probably one of the great moments of my life. And so now there was a reunion on a spiritual level with my dad, and I'll always be grateful for that. And happy Father's Day. And so that's the other part of the story. So now you've heard about my mom, you've heard about my dad, and now you know a little bit about why I'm as crazy as I am because of some of the stuff that I've gone through. So I guess, we've got a few minutes here. I want to say to, we said happy Father's Day to all the dads out there, but it's still not really, really late there in San Diego yet. And if you haven't yet called your dad and told him happy Father's Day, I'm urging you to do that. Even if you had a bad relationship, my childhood wasn't all that great. And my dad was basically absent for all of those years, but he was my father. So I never missed an opportunity to tell him happy Father's Day and spend time with him. He sometimes he could dry out for a day and we would do stuff together. I'm just telling you, if you have closed the door because of hardness or unforgiveness or maybe legitimate pain and things that you went through because of your father, first of all, you need to be forgiving and you need to open that door because you will regret it someday if you don't. The other part of that is many people, if they had a poor relationship with their earthly father, it affects their concept of the heavenly father. And what I want to say is, the Heavenly Father is perfect. He doesn't abuse us. He doesn't use us. He loves us. Your Heavenly Father does everything he can with your best interests at heart. And that's just an essential message. God loves you. God loves you. He sent his son, Jesus Christ, to die for you. And whatever your situation was with your family, even if you never knew your biological father, Your Heavenly Father loves you more than you can ever imagine. I want to encourage everybody with that message. We base our life on that. The nutshell of the gospel is, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whoever believes in him should not perish, but have everlasting life.
Well, that's a great note to end on, Jim. Always great having you. We will see you again next month.
Good deal.
The Bob Siegel Show is sponsored in part by the Law Offices of Matthew Simone.